Hey friends, I'm Jim, your speaker captain, and still alcoholic. Gets me giddy. Tonight, we have a very special friend coming all the way from Santa Clarita, California. He's been sober since 1987, and his home group is Stepping Stones. Special I don't want to forget that was brought up by another member of our group was Pat L. from Santa Clarita. 25 years ago, he founded and organized the annual Southern California Men's AA Conference. He's a humble AA servant who has touched the lives of countless AA members. And perhaps tonight, he'll tell about his role in the opening of doors by the men in his local fellowship. So if we could give a warm Valley group welcome to Pat L. of Santa Clarita, it would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, brother. I'm Pat. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Pat.
I'm grateful to be here. Thank you for asking me to speak. And thank you for that warm welcome. It's always an honor to, you know, you were talking about that retreat that we started 25 years ago. And, in the first couple of years, I mean, it was so overwhelming and people would thank me and I'd break down. And then this old timer, kind of put it in perspective for me. It's hard to accept people saying thank you for something you get so much out of. And truly, that's kind of how my experience has been in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's and I love that you read all the stuff that you guys read before the meeting. It's really important. You know, before I got here, I couldn't stop drinking. I found that alcohol was like that magical stuff that made me comfortable in my own skin. And it put the fire out for a while. Until it turned on me. And I didn't realize how bad it was until I actually tried to stop drinking. And it was when I tried to stop drinking, years later, that I really had trouble, you know. My life was unmanageable. I was out of control. You know, I mean, there's bits and pieces in my story and from where I came from. I was partners with a guy that we had a water skiing business and we used his boat and I had a connection with the city. So I taught water skiing and, I was going to school on a gymnastics scholarship. And, one night we just decided it was a good idea to take off for Catalina. So we grabbed, you know, a case of beer and a fifth and potato chips and some other guy was with us that had never driven the boat before. And so we were telling him, just point at the lights, we'll be fine. And Jim, the guy that was my partner, we got in a scuffle and I threw him overboard. So we're jamming about 30 miles an hour in the middle of the ocean at night. And I told the guy, hey, we probably should come circle back and try to find Jim. And, I'm really grateful we found Jim that night. Of course, like a lot of things, my partnership was over. You know, that was the end of that. And, you know, when I was 16, I stole my friend's parents' car. We found some Colt 45 in the fridge, and then I found the keys to the car and went through 56 feet of the middle divider transition road from the 405 to the Harbor Freeway. And, you know, there was little signs going on in my life, like maybe there's something wrong. And all the things that happened majored in my life was surrounding alcohol. And, it just progressively got worse. And then I ended up, finally I met this lady and she went to Humboldt State and we had two children, and, you know, the only thing that really mattered in my life at that point was my kids. But I kept drinking, you know, and that's just, that's how it was for me. I couldn't stop drinking. Now, you know, there's some people that are new here. Welcome. You know, I'm not sure if you're not ready, there's really not much I can say that will, to open up your mind. We're usually hard heads. It usually takes some real beatings and, violating. For me, it was violating everything I believed in, until it was like a living hell. And that after that, it was like I started it. I knew that my life was unmanageable. It was crazy, fighting in bars and a lot of other stuff. And, you know, I'm married. I'm gone all the time. And you know, one more time, I didn't go home that night. I called my wife from this payphone. That's how long ago that was. It's like 6 in the morning and down on Pardinia, down in the valley, San Fernando Valley. And I said, you know, maybe I need one of those programs. And so, she just, you know, she's loving, just says, just come home. We'll take, you know, we'll deal with it. And so as I'm hanging up the phone, I see the bartender going into, it's called a lamp, and, it's a bar. And I thought, well, if I'm going to quit, I might as well have a few more drinks. And you know, she found me like, I don't know, 3 o'clock that afternoon, just out of my mind one more time. And she put me in the van. And I don't know about you, but I threw up a lot when I was drinking. So we're going down to Palmdale to this care unit. I'm in the back of the van with a bucket, throwing up in the bucket. And I get down to this care unit, and it's like, I couldn't believe that it actually came to this where, you know, I need some help, or I'm asking for help. And I'm still all jacked up. And let me clear this up. Because of the respect I have for Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not going to tell you about all the drugs and all the other shit that I put in my system. But what I will tell you is that if I thought I could have chopped up those plastic round chips that you guys give out and snort them or smoke them to get me out of who I was because I couldn't stand it, I would have done that too. I grabbed everything I could to get me out of me. And here I am. Now my life's to the point where I'm my wife's taking me down to this care unit, and they check me in, and a couple of days go by, and I thought, I got to get the hell out of here. You know, and it's funny how God works in your life. If you had told me what was going on right then, what I thought about it, I would have said it was horrible. So I decide I'm going to escape out of the care unit. So it's in the middle of the night. I live in Valencia. And it's probably 25, 30 miles to my house. And I'm going to hitchhike or walk. You know, so I got my bag. I sneak out of the place. I'm hitchhiking. And 3 angels pick me up. And we're driving. And all of a sudden, they get off the freeway. And I said, where are you going? They go, we're going to the gas station. And I go, there's no gas station out here. And the guy in the front seat pulled out a sawed-off shotgun. And the kid in the back slid a rifle up against my head. You know, they pull over, and now they're trying to get me out of the car. We've got this wrestling match going on because I figured they wouldn't shoot me inside the car. And finally, the 3 of them get me out, and the guy that was in the front seat was the character. He's the bad guy, right? And he grabs him by the head, and he's got the sawed-off shotgun, and he's like stretching me out. So if he pulls the trigger, won't get on him. And all of a sudden I said, hey, it's all in the bag. All my stuff's in the bag. So he tells the kid that was in the back seat, getting squished against the side of the car when we're doing this wrestling routine in the back, to cover me. And I take off running into the desert, right? This guy opens up my bag. I take off running, waiting to hear the shot, and I run by this car, and there's a fire station out there. So I go running into the fire station. I'm ringing the bell. All of a sudden, the firemen come down, you know, getting ready for a fire, and I tell them about the guys, and the guns. And they call the sheriffs. They throw me in the cop car, and they're driving back to Palmdale. And they were going as fast as that car would go, because over the radio it said three armed suspects held up in Palmdale, and they, you know, good chance it's the same guys that held me up. And I've never been in the back of a cop car, not cuffed before, and I'm trying to get the seatbelt on. This is before they ever used seatbelts back in cop cars. And they pull up, and they got the three guys in different cars. You know, from where I came from, I didn't want to identify them. But the cop says, you know, so I ended up identifying them. Then, so the one cop turns to me and goes, so, Mr. LaRue, what, do you want to go back to, the care unit, or do you want us to take you home? And for some reason, that care unit sounded really safe. So, well, take me back to the care unit. So they, you know, if I had made it home, I don't know what happens. So they take me back to the care unit. Now I'm banging on the door, you know, and the attendant opens the door. And she goes, what are you doing out there? And I go, the guys. She goes, just go to bed. We'll talk about it in the morning. So, you know, the next morning I'm in the administration office, and they go, what happened? Where'd you go? And I tell them this whole story, and they thought I was just crazy. And they said, just if you leave again, we're going to kick you out of this program. So it wasn't until the article came out in the newspaper they believed anything I was saying. So I go back to the care unit, and they make us go to these frickin' meetings, right? And I couldn't believe that when you said, hi, I'm Pat, I'm an alcoholic, everyone chimed in. And the first speaker, I couldn't tell you what he said. But afterwards, he comes up to me, and he goes, Pat LaRue? He goes, Jim Stutz. He was my probation officer when I stole that car back in Long Beach when I was 16 years old. And he goes, God, it's good to see you getting your act together. He's like all happy. He writes down his phone number for me. And I take it. I smile. I walk outside, and I threw it right in the trash. Went back to my room. You know, and a sequence of events happened where I end up back. Now I'm up. I get through the program, and, you know, I go up to this place called the Rafters, and there's Jim again. He's at the Rafters, and he goes, hey, you never called me. And he's like all happy. He looks like a little frickin' dog wagging his tail, like he's all happy to see me. And he writes down this number again for me, and I lost it or what. And I went back out, and I was doing the same shit I was doing before. And then I go back to the Rafters, because I got the idea that there was an answer, and there was some hope for me. And there he is, and he pounds on the table and goes, you know, if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you need a guide to take you through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I went up to Jim. I go, Jim, can I get your number one more time? And what Jim did for me was, he opened himself up and he exposed himself to me, to the point he talked about stuff that I thought there was no fear in Jim, and he exposed everything that I thought you were supposed to hide from. And it gave me courage to start looking at what the problem was and what the problem is. And I was talking to Patrick before the meeting. It's always been me. You know, 34 years later, the same problem is staring me in the face every time I look in the mirror. And You know, and the book talks about what the root of my problems are, that selfish, self-centered, driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion, self-seeking. It's like, and the root never changes. It's only by when I tap into that power greater than myself that I have any hope, right? And at first I used to, I had heard, all you have to do is believe in higher power. So people would start talking about God and everything, and I'd raise my hand. I go, you don't need to believe in God, just higher power. And, I was just an arrogant idiot. And I had no idea. And as time went on, and I started dropping some of my defense mechanisms, and that my sponsor told me that they were defense mechanisms that had become obsolete years ago. You're still hanging on to them. And Jim lovingly, opened up his heart up to me. And, that marriage, the domino, sometimes if you get to Alcoholics Anonymous, not everything works out. Things change. So those dominoes were already falling, and she was just tired of my routine, and I just damaged her too much. And so I went through a divorce, and Jim had me move into his house for a while, And he saved my life, and he saved the relationship that I have with my two sons. And I love him for that. I mean, Jim and his girlfriend at the time that he ended up marrying. If you're... And I wish I could tell you that, this isn't something I'm recommending, but this is my story. I didn't get sober, right? I got sober and I got drunk, and I got sober and I got drunk for 4 years. And I remember one time I'm sponsoring this guy, and I'm having, and he's just like me, right? In and out, in and out. And he calls me up, and I said, hey, so have you hit your, he calls me up. He's drunk, and I said, have you hit your bottom? Are you ready? He goes, I don't think I've hit my bottom yet. And I fucking blew a gasket. I go, well, fucking go drink and die. And I hung up on him. I go, oh shit, I don't think I'm supposed to say that. So I call my sponsor up. I go, Jim, why in the hell didn't you ever hang up on me? He goes, because I knew you wanted it, Pat, but you couldn't get it. He goes, and when I showed up drunk at his house one time, this just is embedded in my head. He goes, if you ever get sober, you're going to have empathy, not sympathy, for guys that have a hard time getting sober. And consequently, I have all kinds of knuckleheads that ask me for help. Yeah. So Jim took me through the steps, and that marriage ended in a divorce. But what did happen is that I was consistent with my sons, and I was always around. And you guys would teach me lessons, and I'd run home and help them with bills and try to help them. I was just on the phone with my son before this meeting, and he's a fireman, and he took this test with hundreds of people that took this captain's test, and out of all these people, he placed fourth, And I have two granddaughters with him, and my other son they both have homes up by me, and they have, one has one granddaughter, and the other's two. And, excuse me, if you don't have any grandkids, then maybe you can't comprehend this, but it's another chance for me, another chance to be loving and kind and patient, the things that you guys talk about in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the things that you touched on when you were reading was about working with newcomers. And honestly, that's probably my salvation. as soon as you get here, you need to start sharing the stuff that you learn with somebody maybe a little behind you. I was going to cry help, and this guy asked me to sponsor him. I said, well, I'm going to have to talk to my sponsor. And Jim says, well, you just need to stay ahead of him. He goes, say yes, stay ahead of him. If you have some questions, ask me. But he goes, that guy may not be able to ask anybody else. And so when somebody says, will you sponsor me? And I say, I ask them a question. I go, what are you willing to do? And if they say anything, the only answer I have is, it'd be an honor. You guys saved my life. You put me together. A loving God that I didn't understand. I had no idea what grace was. And that's, I believe that the only reason I'm even on this Zoom meeting right now is through the grace of God, unwarranted favor. Nothing I did. So I've been sponsoring people since I was 6 months sober. My first sponsor was a big one. He goes, Pat, I don't care how you feel. Start doing the right action. It was a process. He goes, you don't think your way into sober living. You act your way into sober thinking. And it was backwards. So what I did was become a hypocrite. I started doing things that no way did I feel comfortable doing them. Didn't want to do them, but I did them anyway. Because I knew Jim didn't want anything from me. He just wanted to help me. And I believed him and I trusted him. And if you don't have somebody like that in your corner, you need to find him. Without that, we can't do this thing. I needed somebody to be able to tell my deepest secrets to. Jim let me do that. I love Jim. He passed a number of years ago, and I ended up, I was fortunate, and I found another guy that was amazing, Ron Desitel. Ron started sponsoring me, I was listening to these guys talk about this retreat. They were going to plan a retreat, and I didn't think much about it. I call Ron up from the rafters at payphone, and I said, Ron, what's going on? He goes, well, Ron had esophagus cancer. He goes, this minister's coming over and once a week, and so he wants me to write down, I think it was 10 things I want to do before I die. And he says, my wife came up with 27. And, we kind of chuckled. And I said, I'm on my way over. And I just went over to his house. And Ron was dying. And I went back to those guys that were talking about this retreat. I go, I'll do anything to make this happen. But we can't wait till summer. They wanted a summer retreat. Can't wait till summer. I like Jim to be like the retreat master. And so, that was the first retreat 25 years ago. I remember throwing out all my food and putting all the retreat guide, because we went up, we found this great place in Lake Kachuma, and we cooked our own meals. So I stored all of the food in my fridge and threw all my stuff out. So, because I didn't have enough room. He went up there, and a lot of people didn't realize how sick he was. So he'd speak for an hour at a time and then go lay down and get up and come speak again. And he didn't say anything about his situation. He was just trying to give everything that Alcoholics Anonymous had given him. And So after retreat, he calls me up, and I go over to his house, and he says, why are you, because I was crying. I looked at him. I started crying. He goes, why are you upset? I said, well, because I saw the next retreat, and you're not here. And I was with Ron when he was when hospice was there, and he was on his deathbed. And I'm in the room, and I'm reading, and he comes out of this freaking coma, scares the crap out of me, and he goes, "Now that you know what you know, and now that you think you know what I know, where do we go from here, Pat?" And where I believe that we go to is towards God. Where I believe we go to is about giving, loving, and giving, and helping others. All the stuff that I've tripped over, and I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. I've hurt people, stolen crap, done a lot of stuff. The only way that makes any sense is by using those obstacles as opportunities Jim used to tell me about. And, you know, if you're having a real tough time right tonight with your life, if you're going through a divorce, if you're estranged from your children, if you're like me, being alone at night and not being around your children and just going crazy, how I was, I'm telling you, there's hope. There's ways of walking through this and getting to the other side. When I talked to Jim about it, he would tell me crap like, you know, when you get to the other side of this, you're going to have a lot to help people with. I'm going through this divorce and this. And I tell him, he says, why are you upset? I go, freaking jackass is living in my house, sitting on my couch. You know, I went by my house and my son came out and he's got a freaking baseball with all the Dodgers names. So he's all happy about showing me all the names, how he got the names and that. And he hands me the ball and that jack, and this guy's sitting in my chair, my side of the window, and I got this freaking ball. And I just go, the best thing I could do is go, you know what? Daddy's not feeling too good right now. I gotta go, honey. And I, you know, and he's just a little tyke. And I left. And I called my sponsor up. So he goes, what happened? I told him, I go, that jackass is sitting in my house. And he goes, first of all, that ain't your house. That's her house. And she put up with your crap so long, she deserves it. The other thing is that you don't even know that man. So maybe he isn't like that. He goes, but I do have an idea, suggestion for you. I go, what's that? He goes, next time you feel like driving over there and looking through the window, I want you to go buy some razor blades. He goes, I want you to take the razor blade. I want you to cut yourself, not real deep, just so it kind of stings. He goes, that way you'll get the same feeling and you'll save gas money. And, you know, I needed somebody to help me, you know, and I was a hardhead. And I called him one time from Long Beach, and he says, and I said, I feel like I'm getting drink. He goes, how old are your kids? And I think they were like 7 and 4. He goes, don't worry about it. They'll forget all about you. And he hung up on me. And another time that guy hit me in the heart. I go, hey, this new guy is going to be at the game. I'm coaching the game. I can't go to the basketball game. He goes, why not? I go, because that guy's going to make eye contact at me, and I'm going to take his head off. He says, well, then don't go to the game. And when it becomes more important for you to spend time with your kids than to harbor that resentment, you'll spend time with your kids. And he hit me in the heart. Turns out that's where I kind of live. But, you know, my sobriety is, it took 4 years to get sober. when I finally surrendered, amazing things started happening. You know? So, we're talking about working with other people. I think it's critical. Because I know Alcoholics Anonymous is working in my life. Not when I get my house back and the people around me that care about me, love me, and you know, get the job, whatever you're looking. Not when all that stuff comes back. I know Alcoholics Anonymous is working when I help somebody else get that stuff. That's when I know Alcoholics Anonymous works. That is working in my life. So we're up at the rafters. It's Saturday morning, and it's just a, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, but it's like it's a sea of white guys. These cowboys are up at the rafters, and this black kid comes in, and he's all jacked up. He's drunk, and he's sitting in the corner, and it's my weekend to spend to get my kids, so. I'm like waiting for somebody to go reach out to this guy. Nobody's reaching out. And I finally grabbed him. I come on, you come with me. So I take him. I pick up my kids. We go out to breakfast at Denny's. This guy throws up at the table. I promise my sons we go play tennis. So I take Barry, that was his name, out to this tennis course with my sons. So I stick a racket in Barry's hand. So he's just like, standing there with this racket. I'm on the same side as Barry. My sons are on the other side. And every time they hit Barry with the ball, they're like high-fiving each other. And Barry got sober. And Barry did the steps. And he was honest enough to open everything up. And I was the best man at Barry's wedding. And his girlfriend at the time was this little crackhead. So me and my sons are the only white guys at this wedding. And I'm up the best man with Barry and Madeline. And we're all crying on the stage. Because one more time, it's impossible to get to where we were at. From where we came from. And it was only through that grace that we ended up doing it. So Barry got a job, and Madeline, you know, got a job, and they end up moving away. So I hadn't seen Barry for about 4 or 5 years. So I got a call, and he's coming back to see his aunt or go to his aunt's funeral, and he wanted me to meet him and Madeline. So we met at Starbucks, and I'm sitting there waiting for them, and all of a sudden Barry comes around the corner. He's got a white collar on, and Madeline is in this beautiful dress, and one more time we just fell apart, you know? And so Barry is this minister now at a church in Pennsylvania helping all these underprivileged kids, and Madeline is like in charge of the women's auxiliary or whatever, and it's like it's impossible, you know. God does amazing things once you let go. Once I got my hands off the reins and started letting God do this stuff. There's another story I want to tell you that I've been working with this guy that just got out of Warm Springs. He'd done 5 years. And in 5 years, he hadn't seen his mom, and I had been working with him for a while, and he was going to see his mom the following day. So I get this call like at midnight, and it's Greg. And so Greg goes, I go, where are you? He goes, he told me the bar down the Canyon Country. I go, look, just call a taxi, go home, we'll talk about this in the morning. He goes, you know what your problem is, Pat? You forgot what it was like. And I started getting mad, and I started to yell at him, and all of a sudden he just hangs up. So I get in the car, I drive down to the bar. Now there's all these cop cars around the bar. I figure it must have Greg already. So I go in, and Greg's sitting at the bar, and they're have some other knuckleheads in the back they're dealing with. And so I go, come on, Greg. So he grabs his money off the bar and some poor slob next to him. He goes, this is your lucky night, punk. He like walks out and gets in the car. I'm just going to drive Greg home and drop him off. So he starts pounding on my dashboard. I go, hey, take it easy. He goes, oh, your precious stuff, huh, Pat? Your precious stuff. I fucking flip a U-turn and I go back to the parking lot because I know he doesn't want to have anything to do with these cops, as crazy as he is. So he goes, don't do this, don't do this. And he's still agitated. So I get out of the car. I walk around to the passenger door. And when I did, he, like, pushed the door open, jumped out. It scared me. So I knocked him down. So now he's on the ground. And love, I kicked him a couple times. And then I see this out of my corner of my eye, this cop's coming over, and he's going, what's going on? And like, Greg jumps up to his feet. And I go, I came down here to help him. So he just saw me kick this guy a couple times. I said, I came down to help him. And all of a sudden, Greg goes, yeah, that's my sponsor. And Greg's not moving. Cop's not saying nothing. So I said, get in the car. And Greg ain't moving, right? The cop still has his hand on the gun. And the cop says, you heard him, get in the car. Now, that's not supposed to happen. And I wish I could tell you that the next day, Greg met with his mom and everything was okay. I've never seen Greg since that day. But the reason I tell this story is that a year and a half, this guy's coming up the stairs at the rafters. And I greet him. And all of a sudden he goes, you worked with Greg, didn't you? I go, yeah. He goes, he'd come home and tell me. And all of a sudden this guy like was on fire. And he's telling me about, I've got a car, but I'm not driving it yet because I don't have my license. And I got I'm going to get custody of my daughter. And he's telling me how his life's all like coming into play. And he said, Greg would come home and share the stuff that you were telling him. And he was really happy to tell me that stuff. So, you know, even if you don't see what happens, all we do is plant seeds. And we try to do the best we can. And by loving on people and giving them as much as we can. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever skydived. I went skydiving, and I watched films of skydivers, talked to skydivers, and if you had asked me what skydiving is about, I would have said, oh, yeah, I know. But when I stepped out of that plane, I had no freaking idea what skydiving was about. And the same thing with Alcoholics Anonymous when I came into AA, you know. They say, you know, go through the steps. And they used to say, you know, let go, let God. I would have told you, oh, yeah, I know what that's about. But until I truly let go and let God, I had no freaking idea what this thing was about. And, you know, my life is focused on being a service. After 34 years, what I know is that my job is to keep uncovering stuff and looking at who Pat really is. Because I catch myself all the time. And a lot of mistakes I make now don't end up with other people getting hurt. But I catch myself and nobody even knows it. And I ask God for help, you know? And I'm not even sure if I could have listened to somebody like me in the beginning. I wouldn't have believed them. Maybe they were too good to be, you know, kind of phony. And what I know now is that it doesn't matter what you think of me. What really matters is what I think of you. What really matters is how I try to help you. The rest of the stuff, it doesn't matter. I've lost my brother and my mom and my dad. And what I know from those experiences is that the only thing that does matter is love. The rest doesn't matter. And I probably overtalk. What time is it? Did I take up all the time? Is anyone out there? Did I remember to turn on the mic?
You didn't tell us about opening doors, Pat.
Opening doors? Oh, for your... Well, there's a lot of things. Like, how can you tell everybody everything in an hour? But I'm glad you're doing that. Thank you for asking me to speak. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And stick around and enjoy the journey. Thank you.
I think you're muted, Leah.